Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith.
The press corps really do see themselves as being gatekeepers. They have responsibility to determine who's a serious candidate and who's not. And if you don't meet their standards of seriousness, then, you know, you're sort of shown off the stage.
Jim Narikas of the Media Watch Group FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, joins us for a look at questions of fairness and double standards in media coverage about the military service records of Democrats versus Republicans. We discuss media coverage of Connecticut Attorney General Richard Blumenthal, who is running for U.S. Senate. He's been under scrutiny for remarks he made about serving in Vietnam. He didn't. But in this and other stories involving Republicans, it's been a case of double standards, according to Jim Narikas. The media seems happy to critique the military service records of Democrats during campaigns, yet they pass on stories about the service of Republicans. Jim Narikas compares coverage when Democrats versus Republicans torture their words or torture the truth. First, a review of the Blumenthal story. Throughout his career, the Connecticut Democrat has made it clear to voters and veterans that he didn't serve in Vietnam, but served stateside. Was he trying to intentionally misrepresent this record? Even Rob Simmons, who was just withdrawn from the race against Blumenthal, didn't think so. Simmons said he never thought Blumenthal was actually trying to get away with a lie. But the press quoted him on many occasions attacking Blumenthal for his "in Vietnam" comments. Conventional political wisdom here had it that Simmons would benefit from Blumenthal's misspeak on Vietnam. Simmons is, after all, someone who served in Vietnam. But it was Linda McMahon who garnered points for the Blumenthal story. The media became fixated on the story, especially through the coverage of primary races and conventions here. All the other issues fell by the wayside, especially the matter of Richard Blumenthal's long, successful record and Linda McMahon's lack of one. Democrats are now trying to bring the conversation back to Blumenthal's record as Attorney General since 1990. He's been well-liked and has not been shy at taking on big corporations on behalf of state voters. Big tobacco, utility companies, health care, Lyme disease treatment, charity fraud. The list is long, and it includes work on behalf of veterans. But Fox 61, now part of a state conglomerate with the Hartford Courant, gave Republicans Simmons and McMahon endless opportunities to express outrage about this comment from Richard Blumenthal, shown on the New York Times website alongside a damning story.
We have learned something very important since the days that I served in Vietnam, and you exemplify it. Whatever we think about the war, whatever we call it, Afghanistan or Iraq, we owe our military men and women unconditional support. And we owe it to them not only while they're away, but when they come home. And that is why your effort is not only important for the physical comfort that you bring to those men and women who come home, whatever their condition, severely wounded or over in the battlefields now, but as a message to others.
Using a family fortune earned through running the World Wrestling Federation, Linda McMahon bought daily spots on the Fox Network affiliate Channel 61 and other channels like NBC's Channel 30. Her name recognition as a media personality went a long way toward preparing voters to hear what she had to say, but a chill fell over the story after an additional segment of the damning Norwich video was posted on both McMahon's website and the New York Times website. This comment actually had preceded Blumenthal's "in Vietnam" comment.
But I really want to add my words of thanks as someone who served in the military during the Vietnam era in the Marine Corps.
This video went viral. Though the press seems to be a bit exhausted with the story right now, the issue is sure to come up again during the election. McMahon pulled ahead of other challengers just after the tape incident, pushing Rob Simmons out of the race. But she's not been able to dominate Blumenthal in the polls. He is, in fact, up by 25% over her in the latest Quinnipiac University poll. The attorney general has enjoyed a 78% or higher approval rating in Connecticut. In Extra, the magazine published by FAIR, Jim Narikas says the media tends to overlook the gross errors, even lies, of Republicans, like, for example, when former President Ronald Reagan spoke emotionally about having visited Hitler's death camps during World War II. He didn't. Jim Narikas writes, "It is commendable to hold misleading politicians to account. Our question is, how universal is this concern at the New York Times?" We asked Jim Narikas to talk about this story.
Yeah, the New York Times, you know, took a look at what Blumenthal was saying and pointed out that there was at least one clearly misleading statement he made about his military service. But there is, I think, a double standard in what gets paid attention to and what does not get paid attention to. The New York Times, during the presidency of Ronald Reagan, completely ignored the story, which was broken by the Washington Post, about Reagan making up a history of going to the death camps after World War II and documenting the Holocaust and having this film of the Holocaust that he made. He said this to Yitzhak Shamir, the Prime Minister of Israel, and it made a big impression on Shamir with this story. The trouble was it was completely made up. Reagan had never gone to the death camps. He didn't leave Hollywood during the war. And had spun this elaborate fantasy in talking to another world leader about his war record, which you would think, given that this is the most powerful person in the United States, the fact that he is engaging in these flights of fantasy might be worth mentioning. But, in fact, the New York Times never mentioned it until Reagan died. And then in an obituary, they had one line about this and kind of made it sound like it showed what an imaginative fellow Ronald Reagan was.
To be able to pull it off, huh?
Yeah, so it wasn't something to expose. It was an aspect of his colorful personality.
You're also talking about Simon Wiesenthal meeting with Ronald Reagan in the White House and hearing a similar story.
He did it at least one other time, where the prominent Holocaust survivor, Simon Wiesenthal, had been told a similar story by Reagan, and he was also sort of surprised to find out that this was all made up.
The American people, though, I mean, had a hard time understanding who Ronald Reagan was, it seems, and he was really probably the first president elected, in fact, in a big way, by Hollywood.
I think that's certainly how he got his start, along with, you know, his work for General Electric. But I think that the news media really had much more to do with the actual success of his rise to the top. There were a lot of strange things that would come out of Reagan's mouth. He had a feeling that if you could make up a story that made your point, go ahead and do it. And you see occasional stories pointing this out. You know, after a press conference from Reagan, there'd be a story saying, well, you know, that's actually not true, and that's actually not true. But the media grew wary of doing that. It seemed like it was too troubling to be pointing out that the leader of your country was just going off fantasizing about things. And so there became this idea, and I think the New York Times ignoring of the Holocaust fantasy is just sort of an extreme example of that. There was a sort of gentleman's agreement that they would look the other way when Reagan would go off on one of these things. And the contrast with, I think that the Blumenthal story is an example of really Democratic politicians being held to a very different standard, where the statements of candidates like Al Gore and John Kerry were sort of combed through to try to detect the slightest kind of inconsistency. And sometimes you'd find, particularly with Al Gore, there were efforts to construct this idea of an untrustworthy, pathological liar that were really based on nothing whatsoever. You know, the invented the internet, the inserted himself into Love Story, you know, discovered Love Canal. All these things that anyone who was paying attention during the 2000 campaign, you remember these things as sort of tropes from the political press. And none of them were really true. None of them were actual examples of Al Gore inventing something.
Well, this story swiftly became a polarizing issue. And as we see in propaganda, you know, there were ready spokespersons for the angry veteran coming forward to confirm that Blumenthal said this or didn't say this. And there were condemnations in many cases. And in other cases, people supported Blumenthal. But so a he said, she said session began. And it's another case of how fast the media in related press outlets can really push a story forward. And of course, in that, there were similarities to the way the press treated the story of Bill Clinton's lack of military service.
Yeah, when you contrast the scrutiny that was given to the various efforts made by Bill Clinton to avoid fighting in a war that he opposed, Vietnam, with the, I think, very casual look that was given to George Bush's efforts to George Bush's failure, I should say, to fulfill the obligations that he had undertaken during Vietnam, where he had gotten a prestigious, difficult to get into spot in the Air National Guard, and then almost completely abandoned his post there. This is not only something that most of the news media steered well clear of, but when CBS News did a story on this, there was a document that they used that turned out to be forged, I think, pretty clearly. But that became the story, was this one document in the story that turned out not to be valid, as opposed to the actual record of George Bush in the National Guard, which was pretty clear, I think.
Well, in this story about Attorney General Blumenthal, as with some of these other stories about Kerry's service or about Clinton's service or about Max Cleland's service, we see saturation coverage.
It is a story that the political press corps seems perennially interested in, but the interest only seems to extend when the candidate is a Democrat. And in some ways, I feel like the Democrats have never been forgiven for being, if I may say, right on the Vietnam War. You know, I think most people agree now that the war was a bad idea and getting out of it was the responsible thing to do. And yet there seems to be kind of an assumption that Democrats, particularly from the Vietnam era, have a kind of an apology to make because their party was anti-war at that time, you know, or ended up being anti-war, I should say. And therefore, candidates like Gore, like Kerry, like Blumenthal, like Clinton, who have a connection to that era, have this sort of built-in credibility deficit that the news media delight in exploring. Whereas someone like Dick Cheney, you know, who was a supporter of the war and yet used economic deferrals to get out of fighting it, that never seems to really be something that was taken too seriously on the part of the political press corps. That's because the Republican Party was consistently pro-war during the Vietnam era. It's not something that they really have to talk about.
Well, I pulled out an old story. This, in fact, something I remembered from my own experience at looking into media stories and really following the lead of your group, FAIR, at a workshop on the media at the Hartford Public Library in Hartford, Connecticut, April 1st, 1989. This was a We Are Not Fools Day event, and we were following the Latin America tour of the inimitable Vice President Dan Quayle. Held a rocket launcher at one point, terrified people. But I've got this story. The New York Times headline February 4th was, Quayle in El Salvador discusses human rights. The author of the piece was Lindsay Grusin, and Quayle was quoted as speaking February 3rd and saying of the El Salvadoran government and military, quote, "We expect them to work toward the elimination of human rights, the elimination of human rights, in accordance with the pursuit of justice." He, of course, left out the word violations twice. We assume it was a mistake. The Hartford Courant later quoting Dan Quayle and saying, quote, "Quayle said the United States expects the Salvadoran military to work toward the elimination of human rights violations." So that was pretty clear. I remember at the time people sort of saying, well, why are you making such a big deal of this? As if correcting the language of politicians is just standard and journalists should do it.
Yeah, I think that is a favor that's done to some candidates and is not extended to other candidates. To take an extreme example, when Howard Dean was running for the presidential nomination, the media took this sort of war whoop that he made during a campaign rally and played it over and over and over again until he sounded like he was insane and basically made a concerted effort to destroy his candidacy, and it worked. That is an extreme example of how the press corps really do see themselves as being gatekeepers. They have a responsibility to determine who's a serious candidate and who's not. And if you don't meet their standards of seriousness, then, you know, you are sort of shown off the stage.
Well, I found myself wondering about discussions that writers and editors at the New York Times and other media outlets might have had about this Blumenthal story. You know, did they factor in the wider problems of veterans, and as an audience, the families of veterans, both from the Vietnam and also Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan?
I think that the focus on, you know, a candidate's experience in a, you know, a war that has been over for 35 years is in some ways, I think, an effort to deflect attention from the wars that are going on now. You know, for those who remember the era, I think it's sort of ironic, but there's a way in which Vietnam is presented as kind of a simpler era where the right and wrong are more clearly defined. It didn't seem at all that way at the time. You know, I was a child at the time, but I was old enough to recognize that. But now there's sort of a kind of morality play. The assumption in the Blumenthal coverage is obviously it would have been more noble to be serving in Vietnam and fighting the war in Vietnam than merely being in the military during the war in Vietnam. And the statement that he served in Vietnam is presented as a kind of gross usurpation of an honor that he doesn't deserve. When you actually cover a real war, which is the morality is very different when you actually look at what goes on in a war, what is the reality of people who fight in a war. It is not in the day-to-day reality of warfare. There's not really that much nobility to it, I don't think. It's easier to gloss over that when you're looking backwards 35 years rather than looking at what is going on in the wars that your country is currently fighting.
I wrote an op-ed piece to the Willimantic Chronicle about Michael Reagan and his commentary. They published it. And Michael Reagan wanted everyone to know that Pol Pot and the Khmer Rouge and the deaths and all of that were really a result of the American withdrawal from Vietnam. And so as part of his piece on sort of history revision on Vietnam, you know, he discussed lots of the details, and many of them were quite wrong. Many of them were very erroneous. But of course, left out America's role in at first thinking maybe Pol Pot wasn't so bad. And I'm pretty sure that was under Reagan's purview to think, you know, maybe Pol Pot could be dealt with, right?
The story of Pol Pot is that I don't think anyone who seriously looks at Cambodian history would say that Pol Pot would have come to power if it hadn't been for the U.S. bombing campaign in Cambodia, which is quite devastating. And then, you know, after Pol Pot's rule and the disaster that was for Cambodia, he was driven out by Vietnamese forces, you know, the people we had been fighting in Vietnam. And the United States, along with China, you know, opposed the Vietnamese-backed government in Cambodia and supported the return of the coalition that included Pol Pot. So to point to Pol Pot as an example of the righteousness of the U.S. cause in Southeast Asia, I think is pretty perverse.
Well, ironically, the candidate running for Senator Dodd's seat, who does have Vietnam War Zone experience, has just dropped out of the race. That's Rob Simmons. He dropped out May 25th.
Right.
And in doing so has, you know, basically said this is about money. As we reflect on that here, knowing Rob Simmons as we do for many years now, he was a congressman in the 2nd District where we're based. You know, Rob Simmons for many years explained to people that he served in the Army in Vietnam, and he would talk about having, you know, been involved in Army intelligence once in a while. And that's all we knew. You know, if you were just reading the press, that's what you would know about him, really. We know he was in the CIA, but that's pretty much the limit. And so people don't realize that, in fact, Rob Simmons, and I aired a tape of him talking about this to a journalist recently during the time just after Vietnam. You know, he actually did interrogations. He said so on tape. He actually ran a system of interrogation centers. He said so on tape. And also was very involved in the CIA effort that came under the Phoenix program. And I say that because, interestingly, when Andrea Stone of USA Today spent the day with Rob Simmons, she only heard about his record of having, and as he put it, she said, as he characterized it, observed interrogations while serving in the Army in Vietnam. Now, this was in the context in 2006 of a lot of questions being raised about interrogation. And so it was a lie by omission, in my opinion, and he did it often. And he did it at the Hartford Courant. I spoke with their reporter, David Lightman. And he, too, saying Rob Simmons never mentioned his record of actually running a detention camp or doing interrogations. That didn't come up, okay? So he speaks with a lot of veterans on a regular basis, and it wasn't surprising that it was Rob Simmons who really led the charge in criticizing Attorney General Blumenthal. But I'm curious about your response to this. Again, it's a double standard. Again, it's a Republican.
I think the irony is that Simmons, having actually been in Vietnam, was seen as a real political asset, and he would have been able to use that if he had stayed in the race against Blumenthal, because you have the person who pretended to be in Vietnam and the person who had actually been in Vietnam. And chances are that would have been about as deep as most coverage went. The question of what you actually did when you were in Vietnam and what that amounted to, sort the moral content of that service in Vietnam was, would not have come up because the political press corps doesn't go that deep.
And what does all this say about the upcoming political races for Democrats, independents, Green Party members, others? I know we have some members of the Progressive Democrats not getting a lot of attention, while teabag candidates like Rob Simmons have gotten a lot of attention. You know, it's just been a very interesting time to watch American media coverage of politics, because there's this gigantic widening gap. There's no coverage of any of the issues.
Yeah, I think that to a large extent, the function of the political press corps in the United States is to avoid issues. And I think the Tea Party is a great way to avoid issues, because it's a movement with a great deal of energy and anger that manages to gloss over the issues of, you know, corporate power. And they spend a great deal of time talking about the Constitution and their fears about Obama and the Constitution without having any actual critique of the civil liberties issues that are really present in the Obama administration. In fact, I think it's fair to characterize the Tea Party position as being that we're afraid that the would-be dictator in Washington doesn't want to torture enough, you know, which is utterly incoherent. And having that kind of movement of supposedly populist anger that doesn't actually connect with the real issues of who has got power in the United States, where is the money going, you know. For people who write for the corporate press, it's really pretty handy.
And two, you know, the statement that we hear often, and one that actually Rob Simmons made about, you know, be afraid of big government. You know, really, that's the concern, you know, that big government's going to get you, or big government.
Yeah. You know, meanwhile, the Tea Party they seem very enthusiastic about the Arizona anti-immigration law, which is basically an authorization for any law enforcement official who has a suspicion to force people to hand over their papers. If that's not big government, I'm not sure what big government would look like.
What about big corporation?
Well, yeah, you have the Tea Party candidate in Kentucky, Rand Paul, has been talking about how it's anti-American for Obama to criticize British Petroleum over the oil spill. So, and he's the Tea Party incarnate as far as candidates at that level go.
Well, Rand Paul, though, seemed to mess up a good thing. Again, maybe inexperience showing, you know, in some of what he said after pulling ahead.
You know, I think that the Tea Party movement, and I think the conservative movement in general, gets away with an awful lot in terms of saying that they're anti-big government and, you know, we need to make smaller government without ever having to say what it is government shouldn't be doing that it's currently doing. And when you sort of get right down and say, well, what do you think the limits are of government power? The idea that you shouldn't be forcing private businesses to not discriminate against people on the basis of race is sort of consistent with the basic libertarian philosophy. So in that sense, I think he is being too honest and kind of acknowledging that the vision they actually have of what government ought to be able to do is really very starkly different than what most Americans think government needs to be doing. And it's much better for the conservative movement to keep things on a level of generality and without having to spell out, if government is too big, how should it be smaller?
We're speaking with Jim Noricus of FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, about his take on the Blumenthal story published by the New York Times May 17th about Blumenthal's statements on his Vietnam service. This story may yet have a few new twists to be revealed. Linda McMahon and husband Vince McMahon, who took over the World Wrestling Federation when she stepped down as CEO, have a complicated history to include federal investigations over violations of steroid laws. And Vince McMahon is more than colorful. During an interview with Oakland sports reporter Joel Drucker, he peppered his conversation with quotes that included the F word and seemed to disdain authority. As a teen, Vince McMahon was the first student ever court-martialed from his former military school after he used threatening language to an official there by his own admission to Drucker. McMahon went on to attend East Carolina University during the 1960s, possibly on a student deferment of some kind. We shared the contents of this clip from the World Wrestling Federation with Jim Noricus. Note that the clip involves Linda McMahon coming on the stage.
Somebody's got to stop him! You can't! Now
Linda McMahon's business in, you know, helping run for all these years the World Wrestling Federation, that was a business based on being able to pull off a good show and a good lie, because the wrestling, of course, as we know, wasn't real. And so, in fact, if you watch some of the video clips of Linda McMahon on YouTube, you'll eventually come across one where she is pretending to be frightened of this wrestler who's gone out of control. He's gone mad. Nobody can stop him. He lifts her up off the ground, hoists her up, spins her around. She winds up basically with her hair dragging between his legs, face forward. So it's quite a dramatic thing. But, it, you know, one has to wonder the meaning of all of that. Pretending, because I think there are at least some people, you know, in this country who just don't have the background and experience to know the difference in places.
Well, you know, it's not necessarily a drawback to have a background in acting, as Ronald Reagan or, you know, Al Franken can demonstrate. The ability to convincingly read a speech that shows people that you feel that the issues that are important to them are also important to you is not that different from the skills that you need to be a fictional character and portray that character convincingly. And I don't think necessarily that having a history in doing drama or comedy or whatever wrestling is, you know, disqualifies you from being a real politician. Though, as Ronald Reagan's career demonstrates, sometimes it is not so easy to turn off the fantasy element and deal in the real world.
Jim Narikas, it's been a pleasure speaking with you.
It's been good to talk to you.
Jim Narikas has been editor of Extra, Fair's bimonthly journal of media criticism since 1990. He co-authored the book The Way Things Aren't, Rush Limbaugh's Reign of Terror, and is co-editor of The Fair Reader. He also co-manages Fair's website and has worked as an investigative reporter for In These Times, where he covered the Iran-Contra scandal. He was also managing editor of The Washington Report on the Hemisphere, a newsletter on Latin America. Ultimately, Linda McMahon will face more questions about accusations of vote buying. The scandal was written off due to her inexperience, but she launched, then withdrew, a voter registration effort where University of Connecticut Republicans were offered $5 bonuses for registering new Republicans during an on-campus voter drive. McMahon's fellow Republican candidate Peter Schiff called her tactic acornish, this a reference to the nonprofit group that helps voters register, largely poor voters, underserved by their own voting systems. The group Acorn, ironically also accused by Republicans and convicted in the media, but then cleared of all accusations of fraud and one setup involving a man posing as a pimp who tried to implicate the group on tape. The court has completely cleared Acorn, but the damage to them was severe, and they're now trying to regroup. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. This program is produced in Storrs, Connecticut, and syndicated with Pacifica Network. TalkNationRadio@gmail.com if you'd like to write to us. TalkNationRadio.org for transcripts, audio, and further discussions. Our music is by Fritz Heed.